Shalom and good afternoon.
Do you hear the mic?
Okay, I'll use it. Since Chodesh Tevet, there's no special holiday coming soon, besides Tu Bishvat. So I decided to go to the ancient Jewish tradition and dedicate the shiur to Parashat Shavua, to Makot Mitzrayim, which are in the center of our parasha, describing the various makot that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has brought upon the Egyptians. Now it seems very clear when you read the parasha that the purpose of the makot are not only to free the Hebrew slaves from Egypt. If that was the only goal and purpose of the makot, the Kadosh Baruch Hu would have snapped his fingers and taken them out. He would have forced Paro with one makah. I mean, he would go straight to Makat Bechorot as he threatens him in Parashat Shmot. Hinei Anuchi Horeget Bincha Bechorecha. It seems very clearly when you read the Psukim that the ten Makot are done not only to free the slaves, but also to teach us a lesson. And the Psukim keep repeating, L'chaim Teda Ki Ani Hashem Bekerev Haaretz. It's coming to reveal God to the world and teach us something. And this would also seem very clearly from one of the major dilemmas that Rishonim dealt with in our parasha, that is the Kadosh Baruch Hu hardening Paro's heart, the Kashut Lev. But they were bothered by it. How can we justify that philosophically? How does that stand together with the principle of free will? But let's put that aside. It seems clearly that the reason the Kadosh Baruch Hu is hardening Paro's heart is because he wants to teach the lesson, and Paro wanted to leave the room before the lesson was over. And therefore he makes sure that he's like, as in the army they would sometimes discuss, he was like a victim. He's not an innocent victim. Meaning the first five times that he had plenty to what to be punished about. But Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I won't let you run away in the middle because I want to teach something. And the lesson is not over until I don't decide it's over. And therefore I'll make sure that you'll be on the podium in order for me to teach this lesson. Now when we ask ourselves, what is this lesson and what's behind it, it seems very clearly when you read the different makot, you can see the clear parallelism between them and the Pirkei Abriya in Sefer Breshit Aleph. When we look at the different nature powers that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is showing his might upon, and many of them resemble, I would say the ten makot resemble the Esor Ma'amarot Shabahem Divra Olam. Makat Choshech, we see Kadosh Baruch Hu showing his control over light, the first day of the Bria. Still in that field, in Makat Choshech Barad, also he controlled the Ma'arot, because he covered the world then with the darkness through the Barad. Makat Bechorot very clearly goes back to the sixth day, to his ruling death and life. Makat Dever goes back to the sixth day when the animal is being created. The Yor and Makat Dam have to do with control over water, etc., etc. You see very clearly how the Makot are repeating to some extent the different natures, powers of nature, which the Kadosh Baruch Hu rules. And repeating this is rooted in a few factors. One of them is in the polytheistic world, which believe that different powers of nature are types of gods, they're dependent powers, that one God can show his control over all these powers. It declares to the world the unity of God, the idea of monotheism, Hashem Echad Vishmo Echad. But more than that, Briat HaOlam is a revelation of God to the world. We discussed here before Rosh Hashanah when we learned about Malchiyot Zichronot Shofarot, how those three brachot include among themselves the three revelations of God to the world. God as a creator, that's Malchiyot, Zichronot as a Mashgiach, Hashgacha, and Shofarot, he reveals himself as giving the Torah. Now when we take the two great revelations of God to the world, as a creator and as giving the Torah as a commander to the world, but Ramat Har Sinai was in front of a crowd of 600,000 men and the women and children, apparently millions of people. Since Adam HaRishon was created at the sixth day, Briat HaOlam had no crowd. It was a great revelation with no, with nobody to observe it, to speculate it. And therefore there was a need to repeat it again, to show the world again God ruling the world. And this is done through Makot Mitzrayim, when many of the ideas I've said here appear in one of the most famous pieces of the Ramban, Nachmanides, on the Torah, the end of Parshat Bo, where he says the following, I read it to you, Ve'ata umar lecha klal b'ta mitzvot rabot. I'll give you a rule which is the foundation of many mitzvot. Hine, me'et heyot avodah zara ba'olam mimei enosh. That's when Chazal described avodah zara beginning in the world. That's a certain interpretation of the pasuk Az uchal likot b'shem Hashem, which was explained by Chazal. Then people started calling other objects as a shem Hashem. That's when avodah zara began. Echelo adeot lishtabesh be'emuna. All these false ideas came to the world. Mehem kofrim ba'ikar v'omrim ka'olam kadmon. Some of them say that the world has no creator. Ki chashu ba'ashem v'yomru lo hu. That was one idea. Mehem makhishim v'idiyato ha'patit. V'amru echa yeda er v'yesh ha'be'elyon. Meaning they said, okay, there's a God who created the world, but he lost interest in what he created. It works on its own. There's no hashgacha, there's no providence, divine providence. And therefore says that Umehem sheyodu ba'idia, he knows what happens in the world, umakhishim ba'ashgacha, v'yasu adam kidgei hayam shelo yashgiach ha'el bahem, v'eni mehem onosh osachar yamru azav Hashem et ha'aretz. And therefore says the Ramban, the Kadosh Baruch Hu felt there's a need to reveal himself again to the world in order to teach us the right ideas about his kingship over the world. וכאשר יוצא אלוקים בעידה וביחיד ויעשה עמהם מופת בשינוי מנהגו של עולם וטבעו. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to come to the world and change the laws of nature, to act differently than the laws of nature, that shows the world that he's the programmer, that it's his program. And therefore he continues, יתברר לכל ביטול הדעות האלה כולם, כי המופת הנפלא מורה שיש לעולם אלוה מחדשו. If he's able to change nature, obviously he is the programmer. And more than that, he's still in the picture. It's not a programmer who made a program and sold it to somebody else. He's still involved. He still knows the secret key of the program. He's able to go into the kishkis of the program and change it again. Etc., etc. And therefore, the Ramban continues that since the Kadosh Baruch Hu won't reveal himself every generation. I have many students in yeshiva, that's their dream. He should just reveal himself to them. Only now, then everything will work out. But the Ramban says, the Kadosh Baruch Hu decided to reveal himself once. Amad Har Sinai is the same thing. Once he decided to reveal himself to the whole world and give the Torah, to Am Yisrael and give the Torah. And now he has the idea of tradition. The transmission from generation to generation is true also about his revealing himself as a creator. Even though we would like very much now for him suddenly to reveal himself, he decided to take one opportunity. That's what's behind this Paro being the victim. Meaning through Paro he's going to show it. He's going to teach us this lesson. Now what he expects upon us is to tell our children and our grandchildren. That's the transmission of the Sipur of Yitziat Mitzrayim from generation to generation, because that story is not only an important historical story, it's a very central theological lesson. That's the major idea that the Ramban develops in these different writings. And it would seem that this is one of the major ideas which are rooted in the having the Tempa cult coming to teach this lesson, and the awareness that's a one-time revelation explains also its length, why it was done in such a, I would say, thorough way, because it came to teach a one-time lesson to be told from generation to generation.
We say every day, Machadish Betuvoi, B'chol Yom Tov with Mass Revelation. You're supposed to see that every day.
Right. I mean, you're touching here a different point, which, with your permission, I won't develop, but I'll just refer to it briefly. That is that the Ramban himself developed the whole idea of what he calls the Neis HaNistar. There really are no nature rules. When you read the Rambam's writings, Rambam believed in the existence of of rules, of natural laws, which are permanent, which are eternal. And therefore the Rambam had great difficulty explaining the phenomenon of a miracle. How do you explain the change of the orders of laws when the world has norms that it runs by them? While I want to explain, the Rambam did not deny, Chalila, anybody should have such a thought, the idea of creation. He has tremendous efforts in the second part of the guide to explain that idea, which is against what the Greeks thought. On the other hand, the Rambam, he is very clear that God is not involved daily in running the world. He created nature, and now the nature that he created is like a satellite. That you can send satellite into space, and now it moves already from its own movement, not through the missile that sent it up. And therefore the Rambam had great difficulty explaining the whole idea of miracle. Ramban, on the contrary, says the opposite. Ramban says there is no natural order. It's always a nes. A nes means that it's always God doing. That's the idea, as you mentioned, of Mechadesh B'tuvo B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh B'Reishit. Only since God usually decides to repeat. Is it better? Since God decides usually to repeat the same involvement, it seems to us as if there's a natural order. But the truth is, there's no difference between a miracle and a daily order of the world. They're both done through divine involvement. So let's close that topic. Let's return here to Yitziat Mitzrayim. I would like to add that not only that Yitziat Mitzrayim is coming to teach us a theological lesson, but I would like to explore together that it's not a coincidence. It's too wrong.
The crowd is up. They hear you. And to share with you a thought which I'm going with already for some time, that when we celebrate Yitziat Mitzrayim, we're not only celebrating, as I mentioned before, our being freed from slavery, but it's not a coincidence that the slavery happened within the framework of Egypt, because Egypt is a whole way of thought. Egypt is a culture. It's not only bad people who had slaves. It's a culture which had a certain idea about man and his place facing God. And part of celebrating Yitziat Mitzrayim is freeing ourselves from that Egyptian, I would say, worldview, the Veltan Shog of the Egyptians, and acquiring a different Torah view. And that's part of the experience of Pesach. And in order to develop this, we'll have to go to a little, different places in Tanakh, mostly back to Sefer Bereishit. When the most obvious hint in Sefer Bereishit that takes us from Shmuel back to Bereishit is Brit Ben HaBetarim, but I would like to take a different hint, or call a hyperlink, in the text of Shi'abud Mitzrayim, which takes us to a different parasha in Sefer Bereishit, and through there to try to explore the roots, the nature of what I would like to share with you, the Egyptian culture. That is the description of the Shi'abud Mitzrayim in Shmuel, Perek Aleph, where is a description here by Simu Alav Sare Misim Leman Anoto Besibatam Shmot Perek Aleph Pasuk Yudale. By Simu Alav Sare Misim Leman Anoto Besiblotam Vichvayiven Are Miskenot Lefaro Et Pitom Vet Ramses. Egypt here, the Shi'abud Mitzrayim is described as building Are Miskenot. They're building cities. And I would like to go back with you to the cities of Sefer Bereishit, and through them try to understand what is the meaning of, what's the culture of the city in the way it's described in the Torah in Sefer Bereishit. And if you want to know to which city to go back in Sefer Bereishit, so we have to go to the end of Parashat Shmot, where we see very clearly how the cities of Paro were built from Levenim, bricks. the bricks, it's whoever wants to see the Psukim, it's in Shmot Perakei. You can see it in Pasuk Zayin. Lotosifuna te tevin la'am lilbon ha-levenim kitmol shil shem. These are cities which are built from levenim, bricks, which are created, not, they're not natural. How do you say chomrei gelam? Please help me.
Raw materials
from nature, but they're developed by humans who are able to develop materials which enable them to build cities. And there's one city in Sefer Bereshit which was built through Levenim, and that is Migdal Babel. Thank you. So let's go to Migdal Babel and start reading there a little. The Torah says the following. Bereshit Perek Yudalev. Vayi chol haaretz safa echat udvarim achadim. Vayi binusa mikedem. Vayi tzu vika be'eret shinar vayeshvu sham. This is the clear link from Migdal Babel to Arei Miskanot LeParo, which were built also from Levenim. They discovered the secret of technology and the ability to create, not to use only raw materials, but to make more sophisticated materials which are artificial, not out of nature, but through human wisdom. But they are able to build a Migdal to Rosho Bashamayim. They were successful in the factory in creating those materials. Here we have a second character of cities in Sefer Bereshit. Who do they want to name the city after? Themselves. Nase lanu Shame. Because a city is an expression of human might and power. You see this very clearly later on in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's objection to such a city. He says the following: Vayered Adonai lirot et ha'ir v'et ha'migdal asher banu b'nei ha'adam. Vayomer Adonai hen am echad v'safa achad lechulam v'ze achilam la'asot. If humans know the secret of unity, of being together, which includes also their ability to use human wisdom and power in order to develop the world, to develop a city, it's described that nothing can stop them. They can do anything they want. When this is not the first city in Sefer Bereshit, there's one city before in Sefer Bereshit. When we go back to that city and see what happened there, we'll understand better what we're seeing in Migdal Babel. The first city builder in Sefer Bereshit is Cain. In Bereshit Perek Dalet, the Torah describes the murder assassination of Hevel by Cain, and he's punished by the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Navana Tiyeh Ba'aretz. Okay, I'm in Bereshit Perek Daled, we're in Pasuk Yudbet Ki Ta'avod Et Ha'adamah Lo Tosef Tet Kocha Lach, Navana Tiyeh Ba'aretz. This is just an enhancement of the punishment Adam HaRishon had when he was driven out of Gan Eden. Then he was told, Bekotz V'daldav, Tatzmiach Lach. That's what he was told. Ahura adama va'avurecha v'itzavon tocholen akol yemei chayecha. But he still can eat from the field. He's still able to be a farmer, only it will be hard. But Cain, what is he told? Lo tosef toit kochalach. No more avodat adama. What is he told? Navana tiyeh ba'aretz. And look how Cain describes this punishment in different words, in different categories. V'yomer Cain el Adonai, Gadol avonim in esol. הן גרשת אותי היום מעל פני האדמה ומפניך אסתר והייתי נב ענד בארץ והיה חול מוציא ארגני. In other words, this being thrown away, this gerush, נב ענד תהיה בארץ, existentially is described as מפניך אסתר. There's no more sense of being close to Hashem. It's a Hester Panim. There's no more divine providence upon me. Komotzi argeni. And you see this later from the Psukim, because the Psukim later describe Vayetze Kain Lifnei Adonai. He's not only being punished that you'll be a Bedouin, you won't have a place to live. This is leaving Lifnei Hashem. Vayetze Kain Milifnei Hashem. And then I would expect, so Kain should be, as it says before, Navanati Ebar. It's how to live in a tent. You know, every few days you would have to move someplace. That's what I would expect. So what do you see to your great surprise in the next Pasuk? He civilizes himself. Vayeda Kain et ishto, vata vatele et chanoch, vayi bon eir. He's the first builder in history. Vayikra shem ha'ir k'shem beno chanoch. And Cain's family are described in the next Psukim as the fathers of civilization. His children are described as Avi Kol Tofes Kino V'Ugav. Tuval Cain is Lotesh Kol Choresh Nechoshet Uvavzel. You don't see any Bedouin here, any Navanat Ebaaretz. You see somebody who builds a city, builds a civilization. And this does not contradict the divine curse. Navanat Ebaaretz. Because the divine curse was not to live in your suitcases. The divine curse was Mipanecha Esater. That's the divine curse. The divine curse was Vayetze Kain Milifnei Hashem. And the city does not contradict the building of the city. He's being not Lifnei Hashem, because the city is Vayikra Hashem Ha'ir Keshem Beno Chanoch. The city, to some extent, we're sitting now in the biggest city in Israel, so we'll develop it, don't worry. A city is not Lifnei Hashem. A city is a place of Hester Panim. I would say it's Hester Panim from one to the other. One of the major experiences of a city is walking on the street and not recognizing most of the people. When I was in the army, I would be in all these bases. I was in the tanks, you know, up in the Golan Heights or Lebanon. And I always remember one of the tabachim there, one of the cooks, would say, "Ah, you're from Yerushalayim. Do you know Yossi Cohen?" I would say, "You know, there are 500,000 people in Yerushalayim." "No, I don't know Yossi Cohen." But like, he had this assumption, you have to know everybody. I say, if you live in a small settlement or yeshuv, everybody knows everybody. And we're all very much familiar with the phenomena that in the yeshuv, people like think that the street is kosher, like the yeshuv is like your backyard. While in cities, we protect our children, because people having a stare panim one from the other is to some extent also as well a crime. You feel threatened. But on the other hand, you feel also hester panim from God, because you feel the might of humanity, of civilization. I mean, I think some of you were once in New York City. I have some reason to assume so. And I sense that when you go there, you feel the kochi v'otzem yadi. In New York City, you don't see the stars for many reasons. One of them is the pollution. That red cloud over New Jersey. What's it called? It has a name, right?
Smog. Huh?
The smog?
Yeah.
Okay. Humans create the smog, but also when you walk on the street and you look up, you get dizzy. Because you see human mighty, human power. Humans feel more, even though I described before, the sense of being threatened from one another, but you feel more protected against nature. I mean, people in the cities, they build walls, they protect themselves, they feel secure, and that is one of the senses of being of Lifnei Hashem, is you feel that you depend upon Him. While you walk into civilization and you build yourself a human surrounding, you feel secured. You're not Lifnei Hashem. And this goes through the next city of Sefer Breshit, as we have read before, Dora Palaga. When they build a Migdal, they want to build, okay? Ir u'migdal v'rosho b'shamayim. And who do they want to name it after? Themselves. V'naseh lanu shem. This is the city which is described by the Torah as v'ata lo yibatzer mehem kol asher yazmu la'asot. Cities can create humanity without limits, without boundaries, without rules. Let me now add, if we want to go back to Egypt, also with no moral norms. Cities are based also upon salvation, the strong use the weak to build the cities. And these cities, these Arei Miskenot leParo, we go back to them, Pitom and Ramses, which this is to some extent a continuation of Naaseh Lan Lanu Shem, Mitraim, which is described as Arei Miskenot, as a city, the cities which were built on the backs of the poor and the weak. Arei Miskenot, they built the cities for the rich. And Mitraim as a city that is Kol Asher Yazmu. No moral norms, no ethics. No, something wrong?
What's the word miskenot?
Miskenot. It's a good question. Miskain. But let's go think now, it means misken, okay?
Miskain.
We'll talk about miskenot later, okay? But it's a good question. The one thing is clear, these cities, they run over the weak. I mean, that's how they build. When you see, I don't know what you experience, you see like the Suez Canal, you have to perhaps also remember that 10,000 people were buried under the when they were digging the canal, meaning the achievements of Hordus of Hera when he built there. How many people died for those achievements? These mighty human achievements, which I'm not against, but on the other hand, they have a spiritual danger. I mean, there's an ethical question of how is it built, and Mitzrayim being a culture, a society that builds a city, has this danger of not being lifnei Hashem. Let's say that God revealing Himself in Mitzrayim, teaching the world about, what did Paro say? Mi Hashem, I never heard of Him. Because it's really, Hester bipanecha esater. In Mitzrayim, the lesson was, Naman teida ki ani Hashem, bekerev haaretz. This is one line that takes us back to Sefer Bereishit, the cities. But the truth is, Sefer Bereishit describes Mitzrayim in another way, which very surprisingly brings us back to the potential or explaining why it's not Lifnei Hashem and Mitzrayim. And that is that Mitzrayim is described in Sefer Bereishit in Parashat Lech Lecha, in the description of Avraham and Lot, or Avraham and Lot, returning from Mitzrayim to Eretz Canaan, after they were there during the Ra'av, and they don't get along too well. And Avraham Avinu says to Lot, choose. And Lot is described over here. I'm reading Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yud. Vaisa Lot et Einav, Vayav et kol kikar ha'yarden ki chulah mashke, lifnei shachet Adonai et Sdom vet Amora, kegan Adonai, ke'eretz Mitzrayim bo'acha tzoah. Sdom is described as a Gan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim in this Psukim therefore is described to as Gan Hashem. When Mitzrayim being described as Gan Hashem repeats itself in the Torah in Sefer Dvarim too, in Dvarim Yod Aleph, when we'll return to those Psukim later, when before entering Eretz Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Am Yisrael, it's Varim Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yod, Ki Haaretz Asher Ata Vashama Levishta, Lo Che'eretz Mitzrayim Hi, Asher Yitzate Misham, Asher Tizra Et Zaracha, Vishkita Veraglecha, Kegan Hayarak. Again, the Torah describes Mitzrayim twice as Gan Hayarak, and it also adds another thing. The reason Mitzrayim is Gan Hayarak, we all know, because there's no rain in Mitzrayim, their water supply is from the Nile. And therefore, it's like a Gan Hayarak, they have watering systems. And they're not having the threat of Batsara that we have. All we're concerned about is how much it rains over here. When Eretz Mitzrayim, they always have a water supply. Therefore, what it means is, that they would have, I would say, almost a 100% expectation of success when you plant. I read it. Asher tizrai zaracha vishkita veraglecha kegan hayarak. You plant the seeds, you know exactly how much water to supply, you know what the climate is, there are no great surprises there in the weather forecast in Mitzrayim, and therefore in Mitzrayim you get the sense of economical security, which, let's add, when it's a gan, how does the water reach from the Nile to your field? So answer is technology. Humans have to dig canals or put pipes, you can call it whatever you want, but once you bring the pipe, once you put the canal, all you have to do is open the faucet. That's all. And therefore, we return again to the characteristic of Mitzrayim as a state, on one hand, a city with a levinim, but also as a Gan Yarak, that the water supply, and therefore the food supply, is on the one hand not under threat, and it's all due to human achievement. You have to build the watering systems, and once you build them, the water is there. And this is something which attracted Lot. If we go back to Lot, choosing Sdom, I discussed it briefly in one of the talks previously, but your permission, I'll repeat it again. You have to realize that the Torah comparing Sdom to Mitzrayim is rooted in Lot's experience going to Mitzrayim. Lot goes with Avraham Avinu to Mitzrayim, and the truth is he likes it. It's really a great place, you know. Apparently, economically, they were flourishing, and things were good there. And unfortunately, Lot had to leave because he was driven away with Avram by Paro. Because that whole business with Sarah being his wife, his sister, it didn't work out to stay in Mitzrayim. So they leave Mitzrayim. They come back to Eretz Yisrael. You see something very clearly. When they came from Haran to Eretz Canaan, we don't hear anything about Lot not getting along there. Because apparently he compared Eretz Canaan to Eretz Haran. But once Lot goes to Mitzrayim, and he sees a different economy, a different climate, different way of life, and he falls in love with it. When he comes back to Eretz Canaan, he can't get along anymore. It's a very hard place to live, you know. Where's the Nile? Where are the big cities? I mean, how do I live here? And he gets into a fight with at least his Ro'im, with Avraham Avinu's Ro'im, and Lot chooses
the city.
He chooses the Gan Hashem. I mean, when you read the description of Sdom here, you see that the Sdom is described on the one hand as Gan Hashem, Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. So he chooses the characteristic of the Gan. But on the other hand, they're also described as, I mean, the next pasuk, Avraham Yashav Be'eretz Knan, Velot Yashav Be'arei HaKikar. The cities too. Meaning Sdom, just as Mitzrayim, was a city and a gun. That's what they were. Kegan Hashem, Keretz Mitzrayim, Arei HaKikar. Lot chooses the equivalent within Eretz Israel of those days to Mitzrayim. That's how he wants to live. And this sheds new light upon the character of Avraham Avinu, that he's the alternative. Because Avraham Avinu, he goes to Mitzrayim and he re-enters Eretz Israel and he chooses Eretz Israel, staying there. And I would add that Avraham is a builder too. I'm going back to Perek Yud Bet. Vayivan Sham, what does he build? Not a city, what does he build? Mizbeach L'Adonai. And he also calls it by name. What do they say? Vayikra Shem Ha'ir K'Shem Beno Chanoch. What does Avraham do? Vayikra B'Shem Adonai. What's the Mizbeach, the altar? You build here an altar which attaches you, the Reach Nichoch goes up to heavens. Or if Mitzrayim, Sdom, well, let's explore Sdom a little more to understand Mitzrayim, because they're sisters, twin sisters. They go together. Let's for a moment glimpse at Avraham Avinu. They built cities. They have a gun. Avraham Avinu is in Eretz Israel. He builds a Mizbeach because he wants to be Lifnei Hashem. They are Mipanecha Esater, and Avraham Avinu is Lifnei Hashem. Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. These are totally different worldviews. What to build? What name to give your place in this world? B'Shem Hashem or in my own name? When we look at Sdom and realize that Sdom is a gan and Sdom is a ear, and it's described in the Torah as a twin sister of Eretz Mitzrayim. That's why Lot chose it. Kegan Hashem, Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. And we look what happened in Sdom. We see very similar things to what we find in Mitzrayim. If in Mitzrayim we discussed having no moral norms, having slaves, we go, there's slavery in Sdom, in Mitzrayim. We go to Sdom, we see something else. They don't like. The Torah says, "Manchei Sdom ra'im v'chataim." Ladonai Noad. When the Torah in Bereshit Yud Gimel, does not explain what's so bad about that. But we have one look at Sodom when we see the Malachim coming to Sodom in Bereshit Yud Tet. And there too we have the clear contradiction or comparison between Avraham Avinu and Bereshit Yud Chet, who is Machnis Orchim, to Anshei Sodom, who are not. But Anshei Sodom not only don't have guests, they're
exploit them.
They are opposed ideologically to somebody else who's Machnis Orchim too. Meaning, it's not that they're not Machnis Orchim. When Lot is Machnis Orchim, what do they say? To make a demonstration in front of his house, they declare it not legal. I mean, Sodom as a city had an ideology of anti-achnasat orchim, which I would say it's an ideology that the Mishnah in Avot at least brings Yeshomrim, Shali Shali Shalcha Shalcha, which means whatever I worked for is mine, and therefore why should I share it with others? Now the Tosefta in Masechet Sota has a very fascinating statement regarding Sodom. The Tosefta said, because Sodom was a gun, because it was such, and God gave them all they needed, they said, all people that will want to come to here is not because we need them, it's to take away from us all this good. And therefore, something which I find really amazing, they were not only opposed to guests, according to the Tosefta, they were against business too. You have to realize, the world of business, to some extent, it assumes that you have something which I need, which I cannot produce for myself, and I have something which I can give in exchange. In other words, the idea of business, even though it seems like you're working for yourself, you just want to make money, but the truth is, you have to reach a certain understanding that in order to acquire all your needs, I need somebody else. Meaning, you have the recognition of the other. Even if I ask for money. The Tosefta in Sota says, they were so involved in this idea of Shali Shali, they were opposed to commerce too. They were opposed to business. Because I have nothing to do with other people, I have everything I want for myself. They're totally, they're strangers to others, they don't exist. This is like the idea of only myself. And to some extent, since the Torah describes Sodom and Mitzrayim as twin sisters, this is rooted in the climate of Mitzrayim too, because it's a climate which humans can really acquire whatever they want. I had some thoughts, but I'm not sure. I have second thoughts about it, but I'll tell you the first thought, okay? When I read the Parsha of Yosef this year, I said to myself, wow, can you imagine a slave coming out of the dungeon and being appointed king because he's talented? I mean, that is part of Sodom too, meaning if you're good at what you do, so do it. I then had second thoughts. I think Yosef was perhaps considered as a type of a prophet who was through dreams. I mean, I'm not sure that any other guy would have got the job so easily. But still, it's like amazing. It's against all social rules. It's success of the talented, to some extent. Even if it's wrong, the idea, but that was something rooted deeply in Mitzrayim and Sodom. For those who feel uncomfortable in their chair, because it sounds very reminding of some great civilization today, so don't fall asleep, okay? We'll continue seeing that it's not deterministic. It doesn't have to be so, okay? It's not that if you live in Gan Hashem, that's it, it's over. You're going to be a Sodomite. No, it's not so. But the potential exists. The potential is there. It's dangerous to live there. Meaning it's good climate, economically, in Gashmias as we say, but spiritually, it's dangerous. Because overhuman success brings you to Mipanecha Esater, which brings you to having no norms, no ethics, no rules. Rein b'chataim v'Hashem me'od. What I would add, is amazing, is this Gan Hashem reminds of a real Gan of Hashem, which really sounds much very similar to Mitzrayim.
On the other hand, you see that during the Rav, Egypt opened up the land for people to come to purchase stuff there.
You're right. It's a good comment.
So a little soisa.
Yeah, but if you read the end of Parsha Vayigash, remember it?
Yeah.
What does Yosef do to all of Egypt, to its own citizens?
Slaves
them. I don't know exactly what were all the motivations. I'm sure Yosef had, it seems, very pure motivations to save the world. But one thing is clear, they made a lot of money out of it. Meaning they changed social order. Meaning they became the slavery of Mitzrayim. And I'll say the following, thank you for your comment. It doesn't start in Shemot Perek Aleph. It goes back to Vayigash. The Egyptians themselves were slaves within Egypt.
Yeah.
It's a culture of slavery. The Paro and Yosef, they own everything. They control everything. I mean, one of the most fascinating things there are, he moves everybody from here to there, meaning you can't even choose where to live, you know? Meaning they have an attitude of slave to the Egyptians themselves. Now, when you go back to this gun idea, that Mitzrayim is some type of gun, it's perplexing, because when you go back to the first gun in the Torah, you see that it really resembles Mitzrayim very much. What's the first gun in the Torah? Gan Eden. And Gan Eden is something which sounds like Gan Hashem, which has no rain, it says in the Psukim, Breshit Bet, Pasuk Hei, V'chol Siach HaSadeh Terem Yev Ha'aretz, V'chol Esev HaSadeh Terem Yitzmach, Ki Lo Himtir Adonai Elohim Al Ha'aretz, Adam Ayin La'avot Ha'adamah. So there's no matar in the Gan. What is there? It says clearly. V'nahar Yotze Me'eden La'ashkot Et Ha'gan, V'misham Yipared V'haya, Amin Pasuk Yud, V'misham Yipared V'haya La'arba'a Rashim, Shem Ha'echad Pishon, Hu Ha'sovev את כל ארץ החבילה אשר שם הזהב, וזהב הארץ ההיא טוב, שם הבדולח ואבן השוהם, ושם הנער השני, גיחון, הוא הסובב את כל ארץ כוש, etc. What does Rashi say on the גיחון, the name of Chazal? That is the Nile. I mean, if I look at some place in Sefer Bereshit, which would be a Gan Asher, that's Gan Eden, and to some extent Eretz Mitzrayim and Sdom are like Gan Asher, that's the name Gan Asher. And it's really amazing that I'm describing to you how the being a Gan is spiritually not something which is so simple here. But Adam HaRishon was put in the Gan. When you look for a moment what the Gan is described to having, you see a fundamental difference between them and Mitzrayim. And that is that in the Gan over there, it does not describe vegetables like Mitzrayim. We saw in Dvarim. What is described out over there? Trees. Right?
Yeah.
We call Eitz HaGan Achol Tochel, and what the Gan also has, in Gan Eden, it has a norm, a commandment, Vayitzav Hashem Elokim Al Adam. Only what happened, unfortunately? He blew it on the first day, meaning apparently being in a Gan is really still problematic. But if we look at Gan Eden, what was the ideal of Gan Eden? The ideal was a Gan not with vegetables, but with fruit, and with norms, and as you said it, he blew it. Meaning it didn't work, and therefore he was thrown away. But Mitzrayim, I'm repeating, has a certain climate, which is a geographical climate, which created a certain spiritual climate, a worldview. And in the Torah it's clear that this is like Sodom. And therefore part of Yetziat Mitzrayim is not to be a Sodomite yourself. It's to go to a different place, to change your worldview. And here we see very clearly in the Torah that part of leaving Mitzrayim is the entering of Eretz Yisrael. But the Torah itself says, "Lo nacham Elokim derech Eretz Plishtim ki karovu." In other words, when we read the description of what happened to Bnei Israel in the Midbar, the Torah realizes we have to go through also an educational process, changing our attitudes, which cannot be done in one night. You can't just leave Mitzrayim, go to Eretz Israel, and that's it. Now, meaning, since Bnei Israel were brought up in Egypt, since they were part of that world, you have to help them leave behind themselves this Egyptian culture and to accept a different type of culture. And if you read Sefer Bamidbar, you see very clearly they have great difficulty in doing this. On the one hand, they left Mitzrayim, they went to the desert, but they, when they have this idea, we have to enter Eretz Israel, they tremble, they're fearing, they're not able to even consider it. They start missing Mitzrayim. They like the warmth of Mitzrayim. You know, you have a bed and you have what to eat. And suddenly they're told, if we look in the Midbar, they're brought to the Midbar, and There's no more Ganya rock. What do they have over there? Man. What happens to them? Wow, Zacharnu at Adagash al Nochal ben Mitzrayim. And what do they remember? They remember from Egypt, I'll read you the Psukim, it's in the Midbar. It's in Midbar, Perek Yod Aleph. Zacharnu at Adagash, Pasuk Hey. Shal Nochal ben Mitzrayim, Chinam. What's the Chinam? But also it means something else. There's a lot of food there, there's a shefa there. Chinam, you just go to the Nile, you take it out. You don't have to work for your bread, Kiv Yachol. את הקישויים ואת המניחים ואת החציר ואת הביצלים ואת השומים. And when they're told to go to Eretz Israel, let's see what they're told. B'zrat Hashem, we'll give another talk on the Meraglim, okay? But just shortly. They're asked, it's like amazing. They're told to go to Eretz Israel, and what are the Meraglim told to check? Hayesh ba eitz imayim. Now this eitz, very clearly, what does it remind us? In Mitzrayim there are no trees. There's kishurim, avatichim, dagim, there are no trees. Now it seems that the tree reminds us of a certain tree, which apparently is Gan Eden, thank you. And the Torah there also brings in Mitzrayim, v'chevron sheva shanim nivnata lifnei tzoa Mitzrayim. And the Torah contrasts Chevron to Mitzrayim, and when they bring back the perot, what are they happens to them? They don't know what to do with such an environment, such a culture. And more than that, when we read the descriptions of the Meraglim, how do they describe Arei Knan to Bnei Israel? They're described in the same words describing the Migdal Babel. I'll read the Psukim. It's more in Dvarim than in Bamidbar, but in Dvarim Perek Aleph, when the Meraglim return. So look what they say. I'm reading. It's Pasuk Kafchet. Ana anachnu olim. Acheinu hemasod levaveinu lemor. Am gadol varam imeno. Arim gedolot uvtzurot bashamayim. V'gam bnei anak ra'inu sham. Now we remember how Dorham, how the Migdal Bavel was described. V'ata lo yibatzer mehem kol asher yazmu la'asod. What did Bnei Israel fear when they heard about the Meraglim? They really believed in that idea that whatever humans do, human power cannot be stopped. Can't stop the human machine of these great empires. Meaning they still have this Egyptian idea. They did not learn the lesson of Mitzrayim. Because what is the lesson of Yitziat Mitzrayim? That the Kadosh Baruch Hu is above all human power. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu can change it. He rules it. He's above them. And this idea of Dora Palaga, Kol Asher Yazmu, Lo Yibatzer Mehem La'asot, Yitziat Mitzrayim proved it's not so. They can build a Beit Avadim. They can build the mightiest powers in the world, in cities. They can build the strongest army in the Middle East. They can do all those things. But what the Kadosh Baruch Hu can do in Kriyat Yam Suf? He can defeat that army, and that's why the centrality of Kriyat Yam Suf is because defeat of the Egyptian army, the state is defeated, and therefore at Shirat Hayam they could declare Mi Chamocha Abaylim Adonai Mi Chamocha Nedar Bakodesh Noati Loto Sefela. He's the king of the world. But Bnei Israel, look how they retell the story, and over here, instead of remembering from Mitzrayim that there's a God above humans, what do they remember? They have a new narrative. What's the new narrative? The narrative is, I'm reading to you, it's like scary to read this. The narrative is, V'tomru b'sinat Adonai otanu, hotzianu meretz Mitzrayim, lotet otanu b'yad ha'emori l'ashmidenu. Oh, it's a conspiracy. He's not really stronger. I mean, the way to get rid of us was taking us out so the emori will kill us. Meaning, they don't learn the real lesson. What you have to learn from Yitziat Mitzrayim, that's what the Torah is saying, is not only that I was a slave, but now I'm freed. You have to learn something else. You have to learn the limits of human power. That's what you have to learn. Yitziat Mitzrayim is not to tell us humans should not have power. It's to teach us that humans should know that there's a God who created the world, who rules it, and you have to use your human might under His guidance, under His rules, with ethics. And when you read Sefer Dvarim, now all those who felt uncomfortable before, I'll try to fix. finish with that. Sefer Dvarim gives hope to human power. Because Sefer Dvarim is not anti-humans being strong. Sefer Dvarim is describing Bnei Israel entering to Eretz Israel and living in those cities of the Kanaanim. In other words, Sefer Dvarim is turning to Am Yisrael before they themselves will move into those batim tovim, tivneh, v'yashavta, v'chesed, v'zahav, yirbiyun, and you'll have all that. It doesn't say it's a bad idea. Sefer Dvarim, unlike Bereishit, doesn't say cities are necessarily a bad idea. What it's coming to suggest us is how to live in a city without reaching those characteristics of the Egyptian city. Now, one thing the Torah talks about very clearly in Sefer Dvarim is climate. Before I mentioned the psukim of Gan Hashem k'Eretz Mitzrayim, the Torah talks about that the choice of Eretz Israel, because it really has a different climate, which helps you remember the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because when you live in Gan Hashem with all those canals, the humans dug them, you can forget the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But when you live in Eretz Israel with the Tara Shamayim, Tishtemayim, it helps you not to forget it. So first of all, you should choose the right place to live. Well, I would say it's good you're all here, not in New York. Good choice. Kol HaKavod. But that's one thing the Torah says. First of all, choose the right place to live. And if now we want to attach this back to the Gan. Gan Eden was Ki Lohim Tir Hashem Elokim V'Adam Ayin. Therefore there was a Nahar. In Mitzrayim they had the Nahar, but they forgot Hashem Elokim. What do you have in Eretz Israel? You have the original, I would say the divine plan of Gan Eden, which is Matar. In Eretz Israel there is Matar. Now when you look at the Matar of Eretz Israel, there is also an Adam, La'avodat Adama. Who? Us. Am Israel lives in Eretz Israel. There's Adam, La'avodat Adama, and therefore the ideal of Eretz Yisrael is not the returning to paradise, as many of my good friends aspire, but it's living in a place which is different than paradise, in a better paradise. Because in paradise there was no Adam, and therefore there was no Matar. But what you get in Eretz Yisrael is there is an Adam, Avot Adama, but he's blessed by God. So that's one thing, climate, the Torah says. Know where to live, choose the right place to live. But more than that, that's not enough, because I want to repeat, it's not deterministic. It's not, if you live in a Gan, that's it. You're over, live in Eretz Israel, now you're a great believer. That's not enough. That's also free choice. I mean, you have to shape your attitudes. And here the Torah very clearly, especially in Dvarim Chet, the Torah attaches the Matar HaShamayim to of Eretz Israel to other Matarim that were before. And that is, in Eretz Israel, there's Matar HaShamayim Tishtemayim. And there was a period in the Midbar which is Hini Mamtir Lachem Lechem Min HaShamayim. And the period in the Midbar, exactly, the period in the Midbar which was Matar, there was Matar which was Lechem. If you remember that period, now you reach one of the major ideas of Sefer Dvarim. You can live in the city, you can have Batim Tovim, Kesev Ezahav. You can say kochi ve'otzem yadi asali tachar lazeh, because you are in such a surrounding, but you will remember v'zacharta et Hashem Elokecha ki hu anoten lecha koach la'asot chayel. Meaning what the Torah says, not anti-koach ve'otzem yad, whatever, all described before about cities is true. Humanity should have koach ve'otzem yad. Only what you should aspire is remembering that it's lifnei Hashem. Who gave you the koach la'asot chayil is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And now you can build a different society within the city. And one of the major ideas of Sefer Dvarim is the responsibility for the poor, for the needy, when the Torah keeps repeating the word achicha, achicha, achicha. And if you go to Parashat Tzedakah, for example, in Sefer Dvarim, in Dvarim Perek Tetzvav, you have a slave. You're just like Mitzrayim. But this slave is achicha. He's not a piece of property. He has a personality. He's a name. And look what the Torah talks about. And here the Torah gives another lesson, which is different than the way most humans respond to their past memories. וזכרתה כי עבד היית בארץ מצרים ועבדך אדוני אלוהיך על כן אנוכי מצווך את הדבר הזה היום. Most of us, for happy and sad moments, we many times when we want to let's say how do we revenge people who did bad things to us, we usually do it to other people. I'll give an example. If I was a commander in the army in basic training, if I was a soldier and they drove me crazy, you know, they gave me all these punishments. No, I became a commander in basic training. So how do I give back to that commander who was bad to me? I do the same thing to somebody else who's weaker than me. That's what I do. If I am a certain system and somebody did something bad to me, I'll do the same bad thing to somebody else. Because I'm too weak to do it to the person who did it to me. But I believe that's how things are supposed to be. So I do it to somebody weaker. I feel it's also about a Karas HaTov. So Karas HaTov is not necessarily returning it to the person who did it to you, but learning from him the virtue of doing it to somebody else. Like if somebody gave you a tramp, let's say, so how do you pay him back? But you give somebody else a tramp. Now what the Torah here describes is that when you're an Eved in Mitzrayim, don't say, I was an Eved, I have an Eved, I'll batter him. But do the opposite. You know what being a slave is about, and therefore don't do it to somebody else. Meaning the Torah here says, learn the lesson. And this lesson of Mitzrayim is to call the Torah that you Vayivdicha Hashem Elokecha. And when the Kadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to Am Yisrael in Ma'amad HaSinai, how does he introduce himself? It's very known, the question of the Kuzari about why is it so. But he introduces himself as Anuchi Adonai Elohecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. In other words, the Kadosh Baruch Hu taught us the lesson of how to restrain human power. If he's poder from Beit Avadim, what do I have to do? The same thing. Imitatio Dei. I have to be midameh to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the lesson of Yetziat Mitzrayim is no to slavery, no to human power, yes to human power, but v'zacharta et Hashem Elokecha. No to being strangers one to the other. He's achicha. And therefore, Sefer Dvarim, if we'll go to the parasha before, kiyem echa evyon ne'achad achecha. Achecha means he has a face, he has a name, you know him. This is the idea of Sefer Dvarim. And therefore, for all those who felt uncomfortable about the United States, I think you understood my hint. It's not, that's really a type of Gan Hashem. I had second thoughts since last year, but it still seems to be some type of Gan Hashem. It believes in power and money and success. But it also has a lot of chesed. It also has a lot of responsibility for freedom in the world. Not everything is ideal over there, so things can be repaired, but the Torah is, in Yetziat Mitzrayim, I'll conclude, the Torah is trying to teach us not only to be happy that we're free, but to learn the right lesson. And the slavery of Mitzrayim was created, it's rooted in a certain environment, and what the Torah is calling us is not anti-human strength and power and success, but to build the right environment and to learn the lesson that is that you should have a lot of koach and otzem yad. It's very good. Build big cities, be very strong, but remember that the guy next to you is your brother, and remember that there's somebody who gave us the koach lasot chayil, and that is not only something abstract to know, it's a demand from us. Al kein anuchi mitzavecha et hadavar hazeh. Good evening.